Thank you, Prem. Thank you, Ganesh. And your listener, Sai Ram from Prashantinilam, the most happening place on the planet, as I always say. And yes, there is plenty happening in Prashantinilam in this 90th year of his advent. And we in Radio Sai too have been praying to Swami to guide us so that we too can make an offering to him, an offering that pleases him.
Prema Swarup Lara.
Happy, 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 be happy. Happy, happy, make others happy. All will be happy, God will be happy.
Love is his message. Love is his form. And love is timeless, celebrating an epochal moment in an endless epic. 90 years of Satya Sai.
So yes, that is one of our theme music in this year of Swami's 90th birthday, and that is only a trailer. There are many such little theme musics, but there is one which is our main theme music for this 90th birthday celebrations, which you are going to hear many times on the radio, and you are going to also see on our website a visual version of this 90th birthday theme audio. Here it is.
Prema Swarup Lara.
Happy, 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 be happy. Happy, happy, make others happy. All will be happy, God will be happy.
Saishwaraya Vidmahe.
Isn't that beautiful? Isn't that jubilant, vibrant, and what a joyous feeling it creates? And this is all about how the 90th birthday should be, and it began with Bhagwan saying be happy. So let's hope and pray that this year is a harbinger for all the good things to come, that it surrounds us with the happiness of knowing him, of loving him, of living for him and experiencing his love every moment of our life. This is a beautiful creation which was done by Radio Sai team led by Brother Anirudh. Unfortunately, Anirudh is not here with us now to discuss about what was the inspiration behind this. We will definitely have him in the studio sometime in the near future. He is in Vrindavan, in Bhagwan's ashram, soaking himself in the vibrations of the Atirudra Mahayagnam. Yes. That is one of the most magnificent things happening in this year. In fact, last Thursday we did talk about it. We shared about the Atirudra Mahayagnam that happened in 2006 and the attention to detail that Bhagwan went about the conduct of this yagyam and What is the significance of it in terms of world peace? How can Atirudra contribute to world peace? We did dwell on it a little, but there is so much more to it because it is truly a giant exercise. It is a marvelous exercise for world peace, and the more we ruminate on it, the better it is for us, the better it is for our surroundings, the better it is for world peace. And my colleague Sai Prakash was there in Vrindavan. He had the chance to document this on the video cameras, and he had the first hand experience of witnessing the first day of this yagyam, and he's someone who has witnessed this and documented this extensively when it was held in Prashantanilam in 2006. So I requested him to be here and share with us. For those of us who did not have the chance to physically be there, we will try to relive that experience through the impressions and the imagery that Brother Sai Prakash creates for us. So that's what we have for Outside Inside, Deep Inside today. After Brother Sai Prakash's live conversation, we will listen to a conversation that I had with Brother Sashank Shah, a former student of Bhagwan's University who served as a faculty member in the Department of Management Studies, an eloquent speaker, brilliant academician. He is currently pursuing his postdoctoral research in Harvard in Boston. I had a conversation with him just about 2 hours ago, and we dwelt on, again, the significance of Atirudram and about the science of these rituals. So I'll play that conversation for you, and after that, there are some amazing stories, very uplifting stories about Atirudram that I will share as we draw the curtains on Outside Inside, Deep Inside today. So that's what we have for you in store in this last leg of Thursday Live, coming to you straight from the heart of Prashantanilam, from the studios of Radio Sai.
Tune into Sai.
Spend the day with Sai.
From 6 a.m. to 9:30 p.m. on Radio Sai Thursday Live.
Radio Sai Thursday Live.
So welcome to Outside Inside, Deep Inside. I'm Team Radio Sai Bishu. The time in the studios now is 8:48, and as I just shared, today we are going to discuss about the magnificent sacrifice for world peace, Atirudra Mahayagnam, going on in Vrindavan. And Brother Sai Prakash is here. Welcome, Sai Prakash, to Outside Inside, Deep Inside.
Thank you, Bishu, for inviting me.
And so do tell us, how did it feel? You had the chance to be there in Vrindavan to witness it firsthand, and you also had the chance to document. I think both are two different stories. But first tell us, how did it just feel being there, being part of the grand sacrifice?
As always, you know, functions where Swami is involved and is done in Swami's ashram. One thing which really struck me there is most of the priests who were actually going to participate in this Atirudram, they might have conducted such homams or yajnas elsewhere, but there was an energy about conducting it in Swami's ashram. And there was his presence, because when we really saw them standing outside Trai Vrindavan, and when there was their whole procession waiting to come, we just missed seeing Swami in the physical form. That's it. Otherwise, he was there.
Wow. Amazing. In fact, as you say this, I'm reminded of what a devotee from Bangalore, Mrs. Lalitha Shekhar, she's a Radio Sai volunteer, when I asked her, how did it feel going to Vrindavan, because she's been going diligently every day to the Vrindavan ashram, she told me, there are two, three things that really fascinated me about the yajnam. One is, of course, the vibrations, which are very powerful and so comforting. The energy is so high that you can almost feel the energy. The second thing she said is, you had the good chance of Bhagwan telling us that this sacrifice is only for lokakshema, for the welfare of humanity. So she said, I made it a point to follow the routine of not asking for any personal prayers, no personal wishes. And I just prayed for the entire creation as I would pray for my own family, for my own kith and kin. That oneness I tried to feel, and that was a very, very uplifting experience. But the final thing, what she mentioned and what you said is, she said, as I was sitting through the yagyam, I started to get a known familiar feeling. Suddenly, I realized that it's the same feeling what I have when we sit for darshan and Swami is in front of us, majestically seated. The same comfort, the same happiness, the same peace and love, the same feeling filled my heart, and Vrindavan felt home once again.
Beautiful. Very beautiful. And in fact, I think that aptly describes what I felt also. Apart from sort of being involved in documenting the event, because then you need to put on a separate pair of glasses,
yes,
to see the angles and see how best to capture these events. At about 3:15 or 3:30, there was a procession. And what happened was, there was the lingam that was placed inside the round hall of Thrai Vrindavan. And all the priests were lined up there. And the lingam was brought out. And the lingam was taken in a procession. Sorry, the lingam was not taken in procession. Swami's photo was there and the lingam was there. But the entire priests, all the priests and the students, and there was an entire procession around Thrai Vrindavan. And
circumambulation.
So there was a circumambulation of the Thrai Vrindavan, and after that the procession moved on to the Sai Ramesh Hall. And one thing about processions, you have everything happening at the same time.
Yes.
You have a Vedam chanting going on, and they have the Nadaswaram. And I remember very vividly Ms. Diana Gillespie, one of those birthday, she says, I love birthday mornings. I asked why. She says, everything is happening at the same time. And I said, you are a musician, and what's so charming about it? She says, then you are not stuck to any one particular sound, but you are stuck to sound.
Okay.
And she says, it kind of creates a blankness in you, which is very difficult for you to acquire otherwise.
Oh, wow.
That was something very profound, and I felt, yes, when Swami would come out, you would have Nadaswaram, Panchavadyam, then Vedam, then Bhajan. And
band. And that was so many varieties of bands.
Bands going on. So there was a nostalgia of something like that when the procession.
And that scene always reminds me of one name of Bhagwan, which is there in Bhagwan's Sahasra Namavali.
Mm-hmm.
Om Shri Sai Kola Hala Priyaya Nama.
Oh, is it there really?
Yeah, it is there. Kola Hala Priyaya Nama. He loves all that Kola Hala.
That's true. So there was this very nice procession, and very respectfully Swami and the Lingam were brought to the Sai Ramesh Hall. And then there were this set of rituals that were done. Basically, it was akin to the birth of a child.
Oh, wow.
Because that's how I looked at it. And there is this child who has just been born. And you're doing Jaladivasa, Pushpadivasa, you're Kshiradivasa. You're bathing him with water, milk, purifying him, offering flowers. Then they actually put him to sleep.
Okay.
That is the last ritual that is done.
Okay.
On the day prior to the first day. So,
This happened on the 1st of March.
This happened on the 1st. So that was a Sunday. And so it started at about 3:30 in the afternoon. And this set of rituals is just like taking care of a newborn child. And the next day was Namakarnam.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, the next day is Prana Pratishtha and Namakarna.
Oh, wow.
So, it was sort of like that. And when the Lingam was being put to sleep, if that's a good usage of the term, but they used it in the narration actually there. They sang songs, they played music, they sang Samavedam, and they offered flowers. And so, basically...
And an infant is actually almost like God, isn't it?
Exactly. That's a beautiful observation. Because there was that sense, you know, one another thing which really struck me is when there is a child and there are about 50 people in a room, everybody's attention is on the child.
Yes.
Because he attracts everybody.
He attracts everybody.
So in that way, the lingam was brought, of course, ceremoniously and with lot of reverence and respect. And then he was put to sleep. So after all these rituals, he was put to sleep. But what really struck me, and of course, that's not particularly in regard to Datirudram here, but in regard to any such ritual or any such yajnam done, that is one of unity.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when they started chanting the mantras and there was absolute unity, that, you know, kept triggering this thought in me when Swami says unity, purity, divinity. And when there was this, Swami always laid a lot of stress on, you know, unity.
Yes.
And coming to that samajam, that, you know, sabha, when
yes.
everybody comes together for a single purpose. I think that's what gives everything the power.
Yes, I mean, the focus, when so many positive thoughts, when so much of positivity gets focused, the power it creates is something otherworldly.
Very true. In fact, a few days back I was seeing a YouTube video, and there was Ustad Bismillah Khan's interview. He said something very beautiful. He said, I used to go to Balaji temple every day to play the shanai in the morning. And this has been going on from my ancestors, my uncles, my grandparents, all of us. We used to go and ours is the Suprabhatam. We would play the shanai for Lord Balaji. While there is a big crowd in Varanasi. And he said, while there's a big crowd and people trying to get his darshan, I just go outside the temple and touch the stone outside. I said, this is the same stone. I was really amazed. He said, probably the statue is made of the same stone which is here outside. If I touch this stone outside or if I touch the stone inside, what difference does it make? I was totally amazed because that's exactly what Swami has narrated.
Yes.
And that came to my mind because here, you know, if you look at it very objectively with no disrespect intended, it is a piece of stone. Now, when a congregation of people come together and there is this entire community and entire set of individuals who believe and instill the faith in that piece of stone that it is a, you know, I would say a form of God or it is having the power of God. If you instill the power of God into that stone, then it does happen.
Absolutely.
That's what came to me. See, till the time it comes to the dais, it is a piece of stone, possibly a marble. I don't know what stone. It was pure white. The lingam was pure white. And it was looking very much similar to the Saishwara lingam here and the lingam at Sundaram.
Yes.
It's pure white. So when the lingam is brought and these mantras are chanted, and then when everybody start believing that it is a manifestation of God, that's when it becomes that.
Absolutely.
So that power of unity. So there is unity in chanting when everybody comes together. There is a purity because you are in sort of anticipation and you're spending your time, energy in a sacred ritual in contemplation of God, so there is purity and there has to be divinity.
Absolutely. Wow. In fact, as you are talking about this faith, they say that the power of our faith in the object is derived from, the power in the object is derived from our faith in the power of the object.
Very true. Very true. All miracles, as Swami said and as Jesus Christ said, is your own faith. It's due to your own faith. So that came through very beautifully. And there were a couple of speeches on the first day. And then we had Swami's discourse, a clip of Swami's discourse. Swami was, in fact, talking. This is taken from the first discourse of the 2006 Atirudram to maintain sort of continuity of the event. And there, Swami is talking about India, about Vedas, about the power of Vedas, and let's say the importance of Vedas. And something which happened very casually and very beautifully, towards the end of the clip, he was talking about India and he said, you know, Bharat is a, you know, the treasure chest, and then you have, this is where all the Vedas have taken birth, and you know, this all that, the glory of Bharat basically. And in a very casual and in a very simple way, he just said, Shivudu ikkada puttukunda inka ekkada puttadu. Meaning,
yes.
If not here, where else would Shiva take birth?
Yes.
I mean, it was so beautiful, so simple, yet most powerful.
Amazing. I remember two, three instances as you're narrating this, because I mentioned this last time, where Sri Nanjunda Dikshit Garu, he went to Bhagwan and said, Swami, when we do this yajna, Lord Shiva will have lot of Drupti, Swami. Lord Shiva will have lot of Drupti if we do this. And Swami's instant reply was, I'm already in Drupti.
He's already having
the... I'm already happy. Swami said, your Drupti is my Drupti.
Correct.
And then Swami added that, I will have that Drupti, true Drupti, if you follow my teachings. That will be my Drupti. Not doing this. No, just the sacrifice.
That is the another thing which really came to my mind. Very frankly, it is just his compassion. Basically, it is Swami's compassion. Because he has never propagated rituals.
Yes.
At the same time, he has not denied them.
Denied them. Amazing.
He has never propagated only karma marga, seva, seva, seva. At the same time, he has not denied it.
Yes.
He has not said that jnana is the most important. At the same time, he has not denied it.
Yes.
So, you know, there is a little for everybody.
And everything has its own place and its importance. And everything should be done, but it should be done in the right spirit. When it is done in the right spirit, everything is beneficial and everything has its merit.
Exactly. Yes. Exactly. So, a ritual is done. Yes, there is a way of doing it. It you know, finally comes back to the point that when you are doing a ritual, where is your mind?
Yes.
Is it focused on the Lord? Are you able to concentrate on Him? Are you able to love Him more? And in fact, one of the speakers very beautifully connected the Atirudram to daily life and to seva. Mm-hmm. And he said, doing seva and loving all, that itself is a yajnam.
Yes.
So that was a very nice point. And that's how day one ended actually. And the day two started quite early, about 5:30 in the morning. Probably the child started crying early in the morning. I don't know. But of course, Brahma Muhurtam, and
yes.
They had to start the rituals early in the morning. And then Prana Pratishtha was done. And you know, that moment is very, very powerful. And when the Prana Pratishtha was done for the Lingam here by Bhagwan in 2006, there was a moment, because I was fortunate enough to stand close and take video, when Swami was actually slightly bending when he came near the Lingam. He was taking support for walking. That was 2006. But when he came right in front of the Lingam, there was a moment where he just raised himself straight up. Just raised himself straight up, and I would say for a good 20 to 25 seconds, he looked straight into the Lingam.
Fixed gaze.
Fixed. A gaze fixed on the Lingam. And that was the Prana Pratishtha. That's it.
Wow. That's it. Infusing life into the Lingam.
Literally infusing life into the Lingam. And if you want to do a little bit of marketing, if, if people really get the DVD of the Atirudram of 2006, there is that clip there. Because he comes around, and when he's right in front of the Lingam, he just raises himself. and he fixes his gaze on the lingam. And
dear listeners, actually Brother Sai Prakash has made a short 6-minute synopsis, highlights of the 2006 Atirudra Yajnam, just for us to relive those moments. And if you go to Radio Sai website and click on the link where you can see the live video webcast of the Atirudram going on in Vrindavan, you can also see the 6-minute video. And there, I think this moment is there.
Yes, in fact, that's how I got reminded of it again. Because it is so powerful and so beautiful. So, it's just his look. He has to just infuse energy through his look, that's it.
Absolutely.
Everything else is a ritual.
Yeah.
Everything else is a
ritual. That is the only, you know, that is the most significant spiritual element that adds meaning to all that ritual.
That's
when the ritual becomes spiritual.
That's the point. So, invoking Bhagwan's blessings, I think the chief priest, he did the prana pratishta, and the lingam was named Traishwara Lingam.
Traishwara, okay.
Traishwara Lingam, because keeping in tune with Trai Vrindavan there, and he very beautifully explained that when Swami set up this Trai Vrindavan, it was according to him, symbolic of Brahma, Vishnu, Maheshwara, all the Trinity, to shower their blessings and for the well-being of people who visit the ashram. So it was named Traishwara Lingam. And after that, you know, the regular Atirudram chantings were going on. But here there should be a mention of the beautiful decoration that was done.
Mm-hmm.
It was very, very heartwarming, and, you know, the traditional kind of decoration that they did on both the occasions of Puttaparthi and Chennai.
Yes.
With lots of fruits and painted fruits that would last 11 days. It was very beautiful. And a huge Damaru and Trishul on the front side. And Swami's chair was very beautiful. The circular chair was placed. Swami's Simhasan was placed. And what was very beautiful was everything that was to be done. The chief priest with a few priests would go up to Swami's chair, take his blessings, come back and then do it.
Okay.
That I found was very, very inspiring, because, you know, we believe Swami is there, but to bring him into the ritual and to be a part of it, so they did that on every occasion. But one place where Swami really gave them a little bit of a difficult time, I would say, is when they had to churn the fire out.
Before the start of the
yajna. Yeah, it does take time
on
different occasions, but this time it took a little bit more time.
Okay.
Because the first time the fire is lit, it has to be got by rubbing of two logs of wood. And there is a device by which, you know, the thing is balanced. And we see it during Dashara and other
yajna. The traditional way of lighting the fire.
Traditional way. But that took nearly 45 minutes to 50 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
They had to struggle it out.
But they did it
way. They did it in the... in fact, a lot of time was just going by and people were wondering what's happening. But they said there's no compromise on that.
Wow.
And that, when I was actually standing there and hoping the fire would come because I had to keep the camera on. these thoughts just came to me. It's not easy.
Yeah.
Many things in life are not easy.
Yes.
And you can't give up just because it's not easy.
Yes.
Maybe this was the lesson that we were meant to learn.
We never know. I mean, maybe Swami was waiting for the right moment, the muhurtam. We don't know what
it is. Yeah, whatever it is. But definitely it was not easy.
Yeah, definitely not easy. And but also it also shows their commitment to do it in the traditional way.
Exactly. So that was stuck to very diligently, and the chief priest was sitting with the thing for most of the time, and since it was taking too much time, he came and started parallelly the Abhishekam part, and then the other priests were doing it, and then they actually got the fire by churning. And so that was a moment of glory when they went and offered it to, even before they started the fire, they went to his Simhasan. And you know, that again set another thought. Swami, when they bring certain flowers, offer at your feet and take it, it's all nice and happy and Swami has blessed it and so everything went well. And when they brought these two logs of wood and offered it to you, and they had to struggle after it. What should be the opinion in which, you know, what should be our attitude in which we accept that?
Yes.
So, sukha dukkhe samikritva.
Everything is His blessing.
Your blessings gave me that, you know, the smooth transition with all the rituals. Your blessings gave me this hardship.
Yes. That's yes. It. And everything is for my good.
Everything is for my good. So that's how it went. And the Namakarnam. And then, of course, there was Rudra Parayanam. For every part of Chamakam that was chanted, the entire Namakam was chanted.
Yes.
So that Parayanam along with Abhishekam was done. Then they went on to the Homam part.
Yes.
And of course, the traditional Abhishekam was done with all the Panchagavya and the milk, curd, ghee, sugar cane juice, the
honey whole, and all that.
Honey, sugar. So the whole sequence was gone through and each thing was explained. So it was quite an experience. And I would say the vibrations themselves were fantastic. Though I should mention that I expected more crowd there.
Mm-hmm.
Possibly, you know, maybe it's, Monday was a working day. The first day was a working day. I would really, I thought there would be more crowd. But I'm sure people are watching live on Shankara TV as well.
Yeah.
In certain ways, technology is a spoil sport. For all those who are watching live on Shankara TV and think they can get the same vibrations, no.
You have to be there for the vibrations.
You have to be there for the vibrations.
Your iPad cannot give you the vibrations.
They can't give you the vibrations. Sitting leg on leg in a nice AC room and munching away some chips and watching Shankara TV, you can not get those vibrations, and I mean it.
Yes, yes.
Because after I came back to Puttaparthi, I saw one of those episodes on Shankara TV, and I was really, you know, totally moved because you don't get it.
Yeah, I mean, get it. Yeah.
In the sense, you get the event, but minus the vibration.
<That's it.
laughs> So there is merit in going and attending, and really, I don't know if I have a minute.
Yeah,
there
please go on.
There is one thing which just came to my mind, and this was narrated by Srimati Kannamma, who was from Mysore, who has written the book Anandadai.
Yes.
You know, the reason it came to my mind is significance of Yajnam.
Yes.
Significance of Yajnam. And Swami was talking to them one day, possibly in the 60s, and Swami told them, do you all know the story of Ashtavakra? He said, yes, Swami, we know the story of Ashtavakra. Then Swami started narrating the story again. And he said, when he was in the mother's womb, he said, no. He didn't agree to what the father was teaching. So then the father himself has cursed him. All that story Swami is saying. Then Swami was telling, when there was a challenge in the royal court, I think it was Janaka's court.
Yes.
And there was a question and different scholars were called.
Yes.
And they were challenged whether they could answer these questions. And if they could not, they had to go down into the lake. And many scholars lost. They could not answer the questions. And they had to go into the lake. Of course, the story at the end, it turns out that they were going under the lake to do another yajnam there.
Mm-hmm.
That is how the story goes. And they all come back to life. But at that moment, all of them who were being defeated was being sent under the lake. But Ashtavakra, when he went, people started laughing at him, saying, oh, you are bent in 8 places, Ashtavakra.
Looking at his convoluted body.
So he said, how are you going to answer this? Then he makes a statement.
Yes.
He says, I thought I came to an assembly of scholars, but looks like I've come to an assembly of cobblers.
Yes.
And they were totally taken aback. He said, yeah, because you're looking at the external form. But what Swami actually drew attention to was, he asked a question. He said, yes, Ashtavakra did go. He could answer all the questions. And he was victorious. What gave him that power?
Mm-hmm.
Swami asked, what gave him that power? Now nobody knew that answer. And no scripture has mentioned what gave him the power.
Yes.
And Swami said, there was a Nitya Yajnam going on. In the palace.
Oh.
Nitya Yajnam. Every day, continuous Yajnam. All the scholars, they went in directly into the Sabha. So a room kind of next to the Sabha,
to the main Sabha palace, the assembly hall, there was this Nitya Yajnam that was going on. Mm-hmm. Ashtavakra took that route.
Oh.
He says, those few seconds of Ashtavakra being in the presence of the Yajnam gave him the power to answer all the questions.
My God. Wow.
This is exactly what Swami told. He says, being there matters.
Yes.
Being there does matter. And he told, that's why when I conduct the Dasara Yajnam, be there. Just be there. You may sleep. Don't talk. You may sleep. He's so considerate. Kali Yuga avatar. He's so considerate. You may sleep.
Yes.
You may not be able to sit and chant, but be there. You have no idea what vibrations and what merit you are getting just by being there.
Wow. So, amazing.
So, I don't know. These were just a few thoughts that came up.
Beautiful. In fact, I would like to go on. Maybe, I definitely would like to continue this discussion on Atirudra Yagyam next Thursday also. Thank you so much, Sai Prakash.
Thank you.
I'll have to play that little conversation that I had with Sashank. And that all, in that also we dwell on the science of this yagyam and the impact of it. And your insights, as well as your sights, and the insights have been very revealing. And I'm sure all the listeners would have definitely enjoyed it. And perhaps all of them, those of who are listening and thinking whether I should go and attend will know.
They should make up their mind.
Yes, now they will make up their mind. Thank you so much, Sai Prakash.
Thank you so much, Vishwam.
So, dear listeners, we'll move on and let me play for you the conversation that I had with Sashank Shah, the former student of Bhagwan's University, currently pursuing his postdoctoral research in Harvard Business School. Sairam Sashank, and welcome to the studios of Radio Sai.
Thank you, Vishu. It's such a pleasure being here once again.
So, I heard that you've just come from Vrindavan after participating for a couple of days in the great sacrifice going on there, the Atirudra Mahayagnam. And you are someone who had the chance to witness it physically when it was held in the divine physical presence of Bhagwan in Prashantilayam for the first time after many years in 2006. And you had the chance to travel with Bhagwan to Chennai in 2007 when Bhagwan gave the opportunity to the youth of Tamil Nadu to redo this great sacrifice. And now it is being done again by the youth of Karnataka who did it here for the first time. And it is again being guided by the same chief priest, Nanjunda Dikshit.
Right.
So please tell us, when you sat in Vrindavan and you witnessed this great Yajnam, what thoughts started playing out in your mind?
Right, Bishu, you've taken me down the memory lane. I do remember the 2006 Atirudram in Prashantinilayam when I had finished my MPhil. So just to give a small sidetrack to that, we were waiting for our PhD approval to come in. So we didn't have any college all through the day. We could have the opportunity to sit there and enjoy the whole Atirudram all 11 days. And while the students had to go to college because we didn't have any classes. So I had the benefit of seeing all of it in 2006. And then in 2007, as you said, Swami blessed us to come to Chennai and visit the Atirudram there with him and see and participate. And now, 8 years later, I had the opportunity of seeing it in Vrindavan. And what struck me when I sat there seeing that grand sacrifice ritual of Yajna, Atirudra Mahayajna, was that the same legacy which Swami had initiated in 2006 in that his own physical guidance at Prashantinilayam by the chief priest Srinanjinda Dikshit Garu and his team of experts in the Vedic rituals replicated in Chennai, and now again 8 years later with the same enthusiasm, with the same eye for detail, with the same feeling of offering to divine for the Loka Kalyana. As we know, the sacrifices, the rituals at Prashantinilayam and the diktats of Sanatana Dharma are done with the sole focus of welfare of all mankind. So I could see the continuity of the same sentiment in 2006 and 7 as it was in Swami's physical presence, and now in 2015 in the divine omnipresence, the same sentiment, the same passion, the same enthusiasm, the same eye for detail, the same grandeur and glory with which the whole thing was being done at Vrindavan. I saw it pan out before me, in front of me, and as I closed my eyes, I could just visualize Swami sitting there and observing all the minute aspects of the Yajnam as he was doing in 2006 and 2007. And the whole atmosphere was so surcharged with the vibrations of the Rudram, the smell of the oblations, the auspicious fragrance of the oblations which were being poured in the sacrificial pits, and the reverberation, the vibrations of the Rudram being chanted continuously made me feel so very elated and so very positive about the whole ambience of the Atirudram at Vrindavan.
Okay, very nice. In fact, I remember talking to a few people who are now in Vrindavan and participating in this almost on a daily basis, and this is something they shared with me. Said, you should come here and be here at least for a day or two, because they say the vibrations are so powerful.
Yes.
It's so palpable. If
yes.
you sit
yes.
there, you will know.
Yes. They hit you. They literally
they hit
you while you are there. I sat for about 5.5 hours continuously from 7:45 to 1:15 that particular day I was there continuously. Not even a moment I was away from my place. And they were literally, I mean, it's as if they are cleansing you silently without any effort from your side. And all of it is just enveloping you in itself. So it was really a very, very refreshing, a spiritually refreshing experience.
And Shashank, what are your thoughts on the purpose of the Atirudra Mahayajnam? It is being conducted for Loka Kalyanam, for welfare of the world. If someone is so-called secularist had to say, I don't understand what is the connection. And I mean, how can offerings made, you know, you pour ghee and rice and milk and honey into the fire, how on earth can it lead to world peace?
Right.
What are your thoughts on this?
Right. So I recollect a similar conversation we had on a couple of occasions in our awareness classes. And we referred to similar points that Swami had raised in a couple of discourses in the on the occasion of the Dasara celebrations in the years of the eras gone by. And in one particular discourse that I remember, Swami said that the scientists today question that when the poor, hungry people are deprived of food, the ritualists are pouring bottlefuls of ghee and bagfuls of rice into the sacrificial fire in the hope that they will get multifold benefits. And Swami said they are questioning the sanity of the people indulging in such activities. But then Swami said the same set of people, when they pour the seeds in the furrow while they are tilling the land and the agricultural field, they do not consider that as a waste of those seeds, because those seeds will give them plentiful harvest in return. Similarly, these rituals which have been prescribed by Sanatana Dharma, which have been in practice for not just many centuries but many millennia, which have been the hallmark of the Indian civilization and which have nurtured the very social fabric of India, are based on the firm belief and conviction that these are means to the end of achieving the right kind of vibrations. We know of the kind of water cycle which we have, the vapor which goes up that forms the clouds, that which forms the clouds comes down as water, and that which goes in as water for the growth of the plants is what the essence of the plants that we consume. It's a water cycle in the science which is expressed. And when these, and the Vedic science says that when these clouds are formed by these auspicious fumes which go up, which are surcharged by the power of the mantras, the oblations which are offered therein with the most purest of feelings, are converted into clouds. Those clouds are surcharged by those positive divine vibrations. When those form into water, that water is surcharged by those positive divine vibrations. When that water gets into the fields, the crops which grow out of that water are surcharged with those divine vibrations. And the crops, when consumed by individuals, that positive energy, that positive divine vibrations get into those individual beings and positively impact that mind.
That's the basis of this Vedic science, which is very closely connected to the water cycle that we study in 8th class science in school. So it's very closely interlinked with the science that we've learned. The only part is we don't learn the spiritual significance or the spiritual aspect of the water cycle. What goes up positively comes back manifold positively. And I guess that's the link which the secular education system which came into India from the times of Lord Macaulay and the advent of the British education system delinked the Vedic inputs which were the part of our education system for many, many millennia and retained only the secular part. It is Swami in his own lifetime who took upon the responsibility of putting together the spiritual and the secular so that we have a holistic picture of life and we understand both aspects of the material and the spiritual world while we lead our daily life and earn our living. So I guess that's the kind of answer I would like to give. There are no shortcut answers. There are no one sentence answers to these kind of critical questions which rationalists may put forth. But I think the example of agriculture and the example of water cycle which has been put forth in our Vedic scriptures are time tested answers to this question. Another thing, it is said that a Vedic sacrifice, if done with all the rituals as prescribed in the texts, give benefits in terms of plentiful rains. And the third day of Atirudra Yajna, I was at in Bangalore, and it was raining, pouring heavily, even while the Yajna was in progress in the entire white field area. It was, as it is called in Hindi, bin mausam ki barish. It was a rain without a season. And that fully certifies, or it's a corroboration to what has been mentioned in the scriptures of the advantage of any Vedic activity done as per the scriptural injunctions. We saw similar outcomes when the Sahasrapurna Chandra Darshanam was going on, the Yajnam. On the second day, in a very, very odd season again, sometime in the second week of November, which is definitely not the monsoon season in Prashanthi Nilayam, we had heavy downpour of rain for almost 6 hours on the 16th of November 2008, the second day of the Sahasrapurna Chandra Darshan, again indicating that that particular ritual sacrifice was also done as per the Vedic injunctions. So time and again we have been witness to what is mentioned in the scriptures unfold before our eyes. It would only be foolish to question some things which we have personally experienced time and again.
Yeah, and I remember every Dasara, when the Yajnam goes on in Prashantilam, you always had those showers
right, in the evening. Yes, yes, very much. And again, those were not the showers of the season. Yes. They were non-seasonal showers, if I could call them. Yes. So
all this positive energy that gets generated with all this effort, this positive energy will definitely lead to positive thoughts.
That's right.
In so many ways.
Yes.
And ways perhaps some we can perhaps elucidate and try to understand. And perhaps I would think that there could be so many dimensions to it of which we ourselves may not be aware.
Yes, that's right. The science of vibration, which scientists are studying and are getting increasing insights into, has spoken a lot about how negative vibrations, the kind of loud music, the kind of very fashionable latest kind of music, the impact that it has had on pregnant women and the mentality of the children born out of that, or on agricultural products when you have a negative kind of music, a very trendy, irrelevant, loud kind of music on that. And on the other side, devotional music, spiritual music, music with a very soothing touch, again on pregnant ladies and the effect on the child, and also on the agricultural produce when it is played in farms. And sometimes even in cow sheds, you see the cows giving much more milk when the music, the vibrations which are generated are of a positive, of a spiritual nature, is much more genuine, larger and beneficial as compared to the counterproductive impact of the former kind of music that I mentioned. And in Chaitanya Jyoti exhibitions that we have here in Prashanthi Nilayam, there has been a lot of detail that has been mentioned, showing of a few scientific studies which have been done in that. So scientists are also unraveling the mysteries of the science of vibration on human mind, on human thinking and human behavior. So the problem is, the ancient sages, as Swami said, had already reached the highest kind of revelations through the spiritual path. we are trying to reach the same kind of revelations through the path of science, and it is going to take us that much longer because there is a limit to which the senses can perceive and hence understand. So we are going to the same direction which the sages had, but they did not have a scientific proof, but they had a scientific outcome which we saw happening, but they had a spiritual logic and a spiritual rationale to it. Science is taking its infant baby steps in order to achieve the same outcome but with a more rational and logical. So I think they will
spending
huge amounts of money. I guess they will end up in the same way. They will take much longer. We see more and more of scientific support and acceptance of many of the ancient traditions which we had but which were not scientifically validated. For example, in Jainism scriptures, thousands of years ago, it was mentioned that plants have life.
Hmm.
It was as recently as about 9 decades ago that the great scientist Professor Jagdish Chandra Bose actually scientifically proved it. So what was mentioned in the Jain literature of a few thousand years ago was validated now. It's not that all of a sudden those plants got life. They always had it.
Yes.
But through our scientific means, we checked and validated it now. Whereas the religion and the scriptures had, through a very different approach, reached the same outcome. So that's the kind of journey that we are going through. We are actually reinventing the wheel because the human mind is becoming more and more scientific. The younger and younger generations want more and more rational and logical answers. We want to question our scriptures. We want to question everything that comes before us. Sometimes one lifetime is not enough to achieve those answers. If we are humble enough to believe the wisdom of the ancient seers, who have spent lifetimes of spiritual practice and have got the revelations from the highest sadhana which they have undertaken and benefited from that, we would be much wiser rather than reinventing the wheel, spending huge amounts of money as you said, and arriving the same conclusions which our forefathers were benefiting from, albeit with an attitude of humility.
Yes, I think so. What this really puts us in the perspective that, you know, whatever we have been gifted, handed down to us by our sages, I think we got to take them with a lot of reverence because
right.
It comes, as you mentioned, with a lot of research.
Right.
And this is a research which has gone on inside them. This is a research which has happened connecting to the source.
Right, right.
And it has happened through intuition.
Right.
It has not happened through experimentation,
right.
It has happened through intuition.
Right. In fact, I remember a discourse which Swami gave during the summer course of 1993 when he was talking about the Darshana Yogas, the different kinds of Sankhya, Mimamsa, etc. Swami had mentioned about the role of Manusmriti in organizing life in ancient times. So there are some controversial aspects of Manusmriti today because the society has changed and we consider them no longer relevant. But Swami said at the time when the Manusmriti was first put forth before mankind for practice, it was very relevant. And Swami said it was not Manu who actually one fine day thought, let me sit, study and write the Manusmriti. Swami said these were revelations made to Manu in the highest states of meditation. And then Swami gave the four kinds of mind, the higher mind, the super mind, the illuminated mind, the over mind. And when he crossed the over mind, you reach a stage of mindlessness, the Amanaska stage as it is called. That time your mind, any aspect of your mind doesn't work. And that's when they capture the highest cosmic vibrations for which they decode through their spiritual experience into real-time literature which they have presented before us. That's the same way in which the Vedas were revealed to the sages. So all our ancient scriptures have come through this path of rising above the senses, above the various levels of the mind, and reaching a stage where you can tap the direct cosmic vibrations and then decode them to benefit mankind. This is the experience which today we are not fortunate to have because our life and our way of living has become much polluted. But at times when it was not so, this was experienced, understood, decoded and put before us so that the posterity can benefit. It's left to us whether we would like to use that or we would like to take a long route which may not even achieve in our own lifetime and lose the benefit of so many wonderful things which our ancients have put before us.
Yes, and as you mentioned, forget the aspect of the mind, forget the aspect of science, but just being there makes you feel good, isn't it?
Exactly. Absolutely. There cannot be any substitute. I mean, you may not need to put any amount of effort meditating. Sitting there for that many hours, I mean, on hindsight, I just wonder how I sat there for 5.5 hours. and it made me feel refreshed and not tired at the end of it. So that speaks volumes. I mean, it's something which is that, as Einstein used to refer to God, it's that unquantifiable something which I cannot express because it doesn't have a language to express, but I can experience it and yet not express it.
Yes.
It's something in that category I would like to put in.
As Professor Venkatraman always quotes Gandhiji and says, he is that indefinable presence.
Right.
I cannot see, but I can feel.
Feel, exactly.
I cannot see, but I can feel. But exactly. I think this is what I got when I spoke to many people also who are part of Jyotirudham. They could feel that power.
Right.
They could feel the presence.
Right. Right.
And you are also fortunate to be part of it. And it is Swami's blessing that after Jyotirudham, you are here in Prashantinilam and you could share this. And we could document this and also disseminate this to all the devotees who have not been so fortunate to be physically there.
Right.
But at least, you know, in some ways we can relive what
sure.
is happening there.
I think
there.
Just one more point which occurs to me, which I would like to add, is that besides the experience and the spiritual benefits, I think it's a fantastic opportunity for the younger generation to witness the glory and the grandeur of Indian culture in such occasions. When they see before them the way in which the entire culture, its rituals, its scriptural injunctions and the benefits thereof are placed before them in such a beautiful way, that the glory which we have inherited over the centuries, the only thriving civilization of the world, India, which is the truth, places before generation after generation the same rigor with which it has survived over the last 5,000 years of documented history and many more millennia of undocumented history. I guess our current generation on such occasions gets the opportunity to witness it firsthand and know what Swami meant by the glory and grandeur of Indian culture and heritage.
Yes, and it always reminds you of Swami's declaration, right? That I have come for Vedodharana.
Exactly.
Veda
exactly.
Samrakshana.
Exactly. And why? It has so many benefits, and I'm sure that's why Swami invested his precious time in this task.
Yeah. Thank you so much, Shashank, for coming over to the studio.
Thank you, Bishu. The pleasure and privilege is mine. I'm so honored to be here. Thank you.
Sai Ram.
Sai Ram.
So, dear listeners, that was Shashank Shah sharing his reflections on the Jyotirudra Mahayagyam and Bhagwan's directions on the glory of Indian culture and Indian ancient scriptural and spiritual heritage. Let me play for you a short clip of Bhagwan where Swami is talking about the glory of the Vedas.
Vedamulu entano srishti yokka rahasyam anta untunnadi. Vedic knowledge contains the mysteries of nature. Ee nature yokka sarva rachanamulu kuda nu andulo nirupistunnadi. In fact, all the ancient objectives have been very well elaborated and explained in Vedas. Okati ani kaadu sarvam kuda ee vedamlo undavi. Not one or two, the whole thing, totality is present there in Veda. Grihasthashramu, brahmacharyashramu, sanyasashramu, vanaprasthashramu, naalu ashramulu yokka satyamulu kudanu ee vedamlo nirupinchindi. All four stages takes ashramas are very well represented, explained. The stage of a celibate, the householder, recluse and renunciant have been explained there clearly.
Ippudu andaru kuda artham chesukuntunnaru.
Now all are understanding the Veda.
Ippudu ee gramam poyina kuda nu aa gramamlo unnatundi streelu kuda nu vedanu cheptunnaru.
You go to any village, women also can chant Veda today.
Kevalamu dehamlo matamu vyathasam undavachunu kanuka ee yokka vedamu chaala goppa vichitramainatuvantidi chitramainatuvantidi.
Therefore Veda is mystical, very special and unique.
So that unequivocally Bhagwan telling us how we should benefit from this gift from our ancient sages and seers. Vedas are called apaurishayas, which means they are not created by men. They have all been got through men by God. They're given by the divine through the illumined minds of the sages and saints. And we can never fathom them. And just because we do not understand them, we should not underestimate them. They are very coded, very mysterious and very potent. And in occasions like this, when Atirudra Mahayagyam is held, when we are there physically, we can witness a tiny glimpse of India's Vedic heritage. And we should benefit from such events. We should be part of it, and we should pray for world peace. We should pray for the welfare of all humanity. The essence of Indian culture, which Swami says is so different, and which is one which makes Indian culture stand out, which has made India what it is today, is this Samasta Loka Sukhino Bhavantu. Let everyone, everywhere be happy. That is the reason why this Atirudra Mahayagyam is also being held. So dear listeners, we will continue this discussion on Atirudra Mahayagyam the coming Thursday too, by Bhagwan's grace and will. And we will reflect more on what we can gather from this beautiful, magnificent sacrifice, and how we can make use of such occasions to purify ourselves and take us closer to the divine. Thank you so much for being with us all through the day, and with outside, inside, deep inside. I'm Team Edisai's Bishu. The time in the studios now is 9:42, and at 9:45 you will begin to listen to a dramatic presentation by Balvi class children from Assam and Northeastern states, presented on 23rd July 2005. So that's coming up very shortly. Thank you so much for being with us all throughout this program and throughout the day, Thursday Live. If you have any queries or comments, please feel free. You can write to listener@radiosai.org. Finally, a sweet goodbye and loving Sai Ram from Prashant Nilay. It is a moment of celebration, a moment of jubilation, of joyous inspiration. It is 90 glorious years of Satya Sai, 90 glorious years of pure love penetrating a million souls in a million ways. The Radio Sai team humbly bows down at his lotus feet in this landmark year of his divine advent.